Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill, and I'm delighted again to be able to speak to CEO Sarah Barrington of Verici DX, a next-generation medical diagnostics firm focusing on the global kidney transplant market. So big welcome, Sarah.
Always a pleasure, Paul.
Yeah, well, many congrats on last month's £6.3 million fundraise. So maybe we can start that. I suppose you just quickly walk investors through what the money is going to be used for.
Commercial adoption, full stop. yeah, that's our prime focus. Here we are. We have arrived. We're in a growth story, and we're, you know, really focused now on the growth of and the adoption of Tutivia. We've had an excellent foundation, as you know. The big news for us was getting Medicare coverage, which sort of enabled us to play with the big boys. And, you know, I think we had reflected some very strong foundational interest prior to that announcement. We had a 68% quarter-on-quarter growth from last year to the end of first year quarter, and then we got Medicare coverage. So we're very excited about that. And, you know, I think we went back to investors and said, okay, time to go. Let's let the racehorses out of the box. Let's go off to the races in a very fundamental way. So we're very excited about that.
And you're going to be recruiting some new sales guys, are you? Is that the sort of the idea and you know, taking another step up on some of the other tests?
That's right. We had two salespeople for that first quarter. One of the things we're doing is looking to, you know, at least double that team. And, you know, supports them commercially out in the field. America's rather a large place, so obviously that's not going to be our final story on the recruitment. But, you know, I think we're sort of thoughtfully thinking about our territories, you know, looking at the concentration of centres in urban areas and hiring accordingly. So our first new one is here with us at the conference. The biggest conference of the year is WTC here in San Francisco. And, you know, we're excited to be here and excited to be talking directly to clinicians with new people.
Yeah. And just on that, on the sales team, how many centers, the transplant centers in the US, do you currently service, both on a sales perspective, but also doing particularly, you know, the diagnostics? Because I guess some of the surgeons know the test and may be doing it, but they're not being reminded or helped or given best practice in terms of, you know, that sales support. Just in terms of, so how many centers do we currently have the test being done, and how many are actively being on a day-to-day basis managed by sales guys?
Yeah, so we have 21 centers open, you know, they're all being serviced by our salespeople. Okay. You know, obviously focused on, you know, opening up a center, getting that first champion, going back and helping them understand where to use it in their practice. They then talk to their colleagues, you go back for an educational visit so that you've got the wider team. And then you're looking for that recurring revenue, not only within the center, and then not only by a clinician, but by patient. And we're seeing evidence of all of that. So if you look at our 21 centers, we have the top four really that are what I would say getting into the more mature recurring ordering. And we're into one protocol, which is the holy grail, as it were. But we were seeing that being up and coming in the rest, and I think that there will be reporting new centres before the end of the year.
Yeah, and the World Transplant Congress in San Francisco, the one you say you're attending, is the idea to sort of like share best practice of how to actually do it, and also the five abstracts that I know you've just published ahead of that particular conference. Can you just talk us through how that one works in terms of sort of like stimulating demand, I guess?
Yeah, that's exactly that. These conferences are hosted by the societies, and this one is AST, ASTS, and TTS. I hope I got all the letters in the right order. You know what acronyms are like, but they came together so that it would be a global picture. And I think that there's something in the order of 6,000 delegates here. It's a large conference, and a packed agenda full of oral abstracts, discussion pieces, round tables, town halls, and posters as well with the abstracts. Here, the clinicians are definitely here to learn, to share good practice, but to also learn about new technology, to have the meetings. There's a big exhibit hall as well where they can meet industry, and we have a lot of fruitful conversations. So it's a very important event for people to be able to have the time out of clinical practice to really think about how they're going to approach their practice in the forthcoming months and even the next year. Think about what they might want to change in the way that they're approaching their patient care.
Yeah. And what's been the sort of feedback so far from doctors? Because I guess you've probably overall now done well over 1,000 sort of tests of Tutivia in the field, whether they've been covered by Medicare or Medicaid or not. So what's the sort of like the feedback so far?
Yeah, I mean, we did. I think we quoted the numbers actually for this year, and obviously that excludes what we've done last year. So you're right. But this year we did 292 in the first quarter, 299. A little bit of a holding pattern whilst we regrouped and set ourselves up for growth there. But very strong foundation every quarter. And I think the interesting thing is for any investor actually wanting to hear directly from the clinicians that are using it, we do have something on our website called Coffee and Cases. Do look under the video resources. These are webinars. So once a quarter, we share best practice amongst the clinical community. So we host a clinician that is using it for a particular area of care. They will give a discussion on where they found that to be useful and why, and then discuss some cases, which I think is very useful in peer-to-peer education. But for any investor that is curious to see what the clinicians are saying, they can look at the recordings directly from themselves. The feedback is excellent. And I'd like to say that really, I think where we're being seen to be the most useful is in the more difficult patients, and especially where they don't have anything, where other biomarkers are not being able to use. So cell-free DNA, if you remember, is an injury marker. That means it has to be used slightly later. The transplanted surgery itself is an injury, and so there is a period of time when the surgery markers need to move out, but that's a critical time also for clinicians to understand what's happening with the graft. There is a condition called delayed graft function in that very early period, and we can be used there. This is a problem that used to be at about 26%, going up to 30%. People are with the push to use more marginal organs, they're now seeing rates between 40 and 60%. They didn't really have a tool to help them. Tutivia is excellent for that. That was our first coffee and cases. We also can help with the distinction between the BK virus and whether it's rejection or the virus. Very different clinical therapeutic options there, and very necessary. We can distinguish. That was our first poster presentation actually from Northwestern, and other situations. They've got obese patients. That was another abstract we've got at the conference. They don't want to take the risk of a biopsy. Looking for a biomarker that's going to work very well there is critical.
Okay, and then just in terms of the sort of the total addressable market in the US, I understand we've got around about sort of 28,000 transplants in the US each particular year, and that sweet spot of difficult to actually treat and diagnose transplants. Where would sort of Tutivia sort of aim ultimately to be able to to be used on?
Yeah, we had a look at this, and one of the things I want to say about 28,000 is that the clinical community have been challenged to double that number in the next 3 to 5 years. So there's a lot of discussion about how to do that without reducing any of the quality of care and metrics around that. So, I mean, that's the first thing. But if we start with the 28,000, we had a look at various protocols, and we came up with a weighted average of each patient could have a weighted average of 12 times post-transplant a test. That's obviously less if nothing's going on and more if something's going on. So, we worked through those figures. That was about a 900 million addressable market when we processed that. And we had a look and said, okay, well, if you look at the areas that we address, we looked at DGF, for example. At the time, it was accounting for 26%. Historically, as I said, before we have gone up to, we've seen rates going up now to anywhere between 40 and 60% of patients, mainly because they're using more risky organs, the transport times are longer, et cetera. And so they recognize in their push to use more organs and increase that transplant, that they're taking on more problems. So again, that's that's a figure that's severely on the rise. We have other areas such as BK. We have multiple transplants, either in multiple organs or previous transplants, or monitoring drugs like beloconversion. All of these are areas that have traditionally not been very well served, and are what we think is directly applicable to the use of Tutivia before it even thinks about sort of mainstream protocols. And we estimated that that would be about a third of the market. So that's about 300 million addressable market, right here, right now, as Fat Boy Slim, I think it was used to say, aging myself there. But for us, that's a direct route into the market. They don't really have anything that they can use, and we can be used. When we looked at our 21 centers and applied that, we have about 10% of all transplants being used, being done in those centers. So when you kind of do the math and multiply it up, that's 10% of that 300 million is about 30 million already being addressed prior to the kind of growth story of Tutivia. And I think that's sort of reassuring for our investors that we're poised and we're on that tipping point of growth.
How many centers are there, transplant centers across the US do sort of kidney transplants? If you cover 21, how many are there in total?
Yeah, so there's roughly, 230. Let's sort of use round numbers. And we did the analysis. And when you take out pediatric centers and you take out those that do, say, less than 10 a year, really, we think about the numbers being 180. And when we thought about our sales force and what does that mean for growth, what is the cost of growth here? We did a calculation that each salesperson should do anywhere between 12 and 15 centers in their territory. So that leaves you with a sort of sales force of, anywhere around 15. Obviously, you have support behind that, but it's a reasonable cost of those of selling to physicians and, adopting that adoption in the market. I think, obviously, not only is it a fairly concentrated call point, but of course you've got that recurring testing that sort of facilitates the efficiency of your sales force in addressing that testing market.
And that $300 million annual sort of like total addressable market saying that covers all the suite of tests. It's all you when you're every all of them are three. It isn't just your two tibia. It's all of them, is it? Or is
No,
that
it's just two
that's just two
tibia.
tibia, is it?
Yeah,
Wow.
that's right. Yeah. And as I said, it's not that the rest of the 900 million is not addressable by us. That's the, segment of the market that we're currently looking at. We're producing data which is very interesting, which is showing that two tibia is very helpful and quite sensitive in changes of dosing of the medication. And in many ways, we think about the story being about rejection in transplant. That's the obvious story, and we all talk about rejection. But in fact, the real story is clinicians are struggling to find the right dose of immunosuppressant therapy per patient. What they're balancing is if I give too much, I don't have rejection, but I'm allowing infection and underlying cancer progression. And so you can, they're constantly saying, am I going to lose the organ or am I going to lose the patient for another reason? And you see that sort of balancing act that's going on. And what they're looking for is sensitive tests to be able to tell them, what's happening when they change that dosing in very short order, as you can tell. They're not really looking to say, oh, I've injured the organ and now I know about it. So in fact, in the BK virus abstract actually showed some very early data showing the usefulness of tutivia in that sort of serial way and in re reaction to the changes in immunosuppression.
Did I hear it correct? Also, you mentioned that the number of tests per transplant is up to 12. Was that is that was that
Yeah,
what it told you?
that's probably over a 2 year period.
Wow.
Yes, it was more than we thought, and I think initially when we've been th when the biomarkers were being used, they were being used kind of on a time basis. I'd like to test every quarter, for example. Some people test every month, but effectively, when you look at event-driven testing. It's what we call for cause or injury or rejection concerns. The protocols will be more frequent. And so that's why we did a weighted average and had a look at, what that may mean over a 2 year period. Obviously, heavier upfront in the first year. But the protocols we've seen are a little bit more frequent than we were anticipating, but that when we, as I said, we hadn't really been looking at event-driven protocols in the past. So I think, and of course that's where we're operating, which is saying something's going on, I need some help.
And just on that sort of like the Medicare coverage, obviously we've got per test 2,000, I think $650 per test has been sort of for the insurance coverage. Have you seen any disruption at all from what's been happening with Trump out in the States on Medicare funding? Because it seems as though quite a lot of coverage of certain things has dropped to the wayside.
Where I really see the push in Medicare, so transplant traditionally has been seen as a more, if you're thinking about a population-wide health economics model, traditionally it's been seen as a more efficient use of the healthcare dollars than dialysis. So what we actually see in that sort of push towards making Medicare more efficient is initiatives such as, and I'm going to call it by its acronym, it's called IOTA, but on these challenges, which is actually we want to see more transplant and we don't want to see any reduction in the quality metrics. We don't want to lose organs and then have to retransplant. So there's a real push towards that. But it is really fundamentally behind this sort of idea that we're trying to reduce the costs of dialysis. So, of course, you know, transplant is one of those solutions. So I see that as a initiative. And as I said, you know, at the conference, there's been a lot of discussion about, well, how do you double the number of transplants? And if you're taking riskier organs, how do you keep the success rate that they've got? And, you know, that to me is a push for testing. You know, you're going to need more precise information as you go through that. I think the more generalized areas of you know, taking people off Medicare it will have some impact. I haven't seen it so much yet. That may play out in the next year. But traditionally, it really hasn't been the population that are contemplating transplant care in any case, because you know, there's time off work, there's other aspects to the ongoing management of a transplant, which tends to lead to a certain you know, population. But that's not universal. It's really hard to talk in generalities.
Yeah.
And you know, I think we'll just have to see how that manifests over the next couple of years.
Yeah. So just on top level sort of economics, if you've got a sort of really, you've got a patient who's in that high risk category, difficult to treat, is on currently on dialysis, then if you did the test up to say 10 times over 2 years, that would be literally $26,000 over that 2 year period. But because of the cost of the dialysis and the other sort of, like,
no, they're, you know, not on dialysis. Don't forget, once you've taken a patient into transplant, you've taken them off dialysis.
Yes, you have. Yeah, but they would. Yeah. Let's assume that if they would otherwise, if you hadn't have had a transplant, they were risky and they couldn't without your test have a transplant to monitor them and then to do the immunosuppressant to make sure that they carry on. They would be otherwise having a dialysis cost if they hadn't have had that transplant. I was just trying to understand the total.
Yeah, I mean, well, then we'll have to have a whole different session on that, Paul.
Yeah, okay, all right, fine.
I can sort of share with you that you've got to think about it as dialysis is lifelong.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
And transplant is, you know, the testing for transplant is in that first few years. So,
yeah, okay.
You know, just in terms of logic,
right. Okay,
you see,
yeah,
you're
yeah.
Talking about numbers of years comparison. You can see how it would cost back in, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move to the other test. We've got Clarava, which was the prognostic to do with the you know, kidney transplant rejection, which is now used or licensed to Thermo Fisher. How is that one progressing, that partnership?
Very well. We've had some fun joint events here at the conference. They hosted a symposium where Petra was showcased. You know, I'm thrilled with how they're approaching the market. We see a lot of push behind it, and we continue to support them. I think very much as we talk to clinicians, we recognize that there's a certain amount of education in the base technology. This is effectively a step up in technology. It's a new front. The education that goes into saying, okay, what's an RNA signature? How was it developed? Did you use ChatGPT to select your genes? No, it's deep learning mathematical models. You know, all of that is in common. You know, both teams recognize that sharing contacts, going in together, doing those educational visits together, becomes more worthwhile for the clinicians and their time. You know, when they're getting a group of people out of the clinic to listen to these educational events, we want to make it as efficient as possible. And so the two teams have come together, you know, got to know each other, sharing contacts, and where appropriate to go in together to you know, obviously make these educational sessions even more worthwhile. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited to see how well the teams got together over the conference and how much we're coordinating.
Yeah, and when do you think the Petra test will be sort of like, fully given the hard launch by Thermo Fisher across the US to get some sort of, serious volumes?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that's always a little unpredictable is when your publication comes out. So I think that that's what we're looking for this year. Clinicians are always, especially with novel tests, want to see a peer-reviewed journal article, and we have that in the works. But I think that that's one of the gating items. I do see them going out doing that prep work. So I'll be excited to see when that all comes together before the end of the year.
Okay, good. And then just turning to the last test, we've got the Protasia one and also the urine tests, which you're doing some work on. How are they progressing?
Well, I mean, just my team are busy hitting
Yeah.
those project milestones. Not very exciting for investors, but yes, it's on track. They're working well. We've still got a lot of interest, as you can imagine, but we're excited to be talking about that more kind of towards the end of the year and into next year.
Good. And sort of just the final then closing sort of key messages for investors for over the next 12 months. I think you've got a cash runway until sort of the back end of next year, 2026, haven't you? I think.
Yeah, that's right. Just continue to follow us on social media, where you can see some of our commercial efforts. We'll try and inform people as much as we can. But really the team is very focused on the clinical community, getting our test adopted, used, trusted. And we're excited to look forward to the next 12 months of growth.
Brilliant. Okay, well, I'll have a good look on the website as well for the feedback from clinicians. That will be fascinating. So thanks again, Sarah, and best of luck at the conference in San Francisco.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.